Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's voices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Research has demonstrated that individuals with mental and substance abuse disorders may die decades earlier than the average person. These deaths are mostly preventable. Chronic illnesses like obesity, hypertension, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease that have often been underdiagnosed or left untreated. The many obstacles to care include barriers to primary care and challenges in dealing with complex healthcare systems. Three agencies have joined forces to improve integration of physical and behavioral health care for individuals with mental illness, substance abuse, with a new goal called, a new program called San Luis Obispo Health Integration Project, or SLOHIP, with a primary goal to reduce chronic disease for individuals through early detection, intervention, and prevention education, and to ease the barriers and obstacles to receiving care. My guests today are here to talk more about the project, and they are Ann Robin, County of San Luis Obispo Health Agency Behavioral Health Administrator, Donna Hayes, Project Director, San Luis Obispo Health Integration Project, and Jennifer Robinson, the Community Health Center, Community Health Care Service Coordinator for Homeless, Medicare, and Substance Abuse with Community Health Centers of the Central Coast, or CHC. You're invited to participate in our conversation today, and you can be part of our discussion, and you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. And again, you can call in and be part of us by calling in at 805-781-3875. And thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you, Chris.
Really interesting program, and I'm looking forward to learning a lot more about it. So, and I'll start with you. What was it that you were seeing across these agencies that really was the start of, you know, the identification of a problem that was not being addressed?
Well, Chris, thank you. You gave a good overview in your introduction that individuals who have mental illnesses, specifically serious mental illnesses, have for many years had difficulty accessing physical health care, or when they did, they were not always able to communicate their needs accurately or clearly, and did not always access the care or receive it in a way that would be the most helpful. I've been doing public mental health services and addiction services for over 35 years, and while we've seen some improvement in the reduction of stigma and the ability for individuals who suffer from addiction and mental illness to be seen in physical health care settings in a more open and welcoming fashion, there's still people who have barriers to access to care. So for the past 10 years or so, I have been looking for ways to integrate the physical health care services within a behavioral health setting, because the folks who come to us for behavioral health treatment generally have a good relationship with our providers. They feel safe. They have developed some trust. And if we can bridge that gap so that the physical health care provider can be seen as part of that team, it opens doors and the communication can be better. So about 4 years ago, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Agency, SAMHSA, a federal agency, had put out some grant opportunities to do integrated care. We applied for it 4 years ago. We did not receive the grant at that time, but then a year later they said, well, we still have funds. Are you interested? Wow. So we started on this project to bring the CHC, the healthcare provider, with our mental health clinic together to provide integrated care within the mental health site. And it's taken off from there.
Now, and I want to really talk about breaking it down a little bit, because what you're talking about is individuals who may have a mental illness, may be unusual in their behaviors, in how they're seen or what their special needs are in terms of communication, or it may be that people are uncomfortable or feel ill-equipped. So in a regular physician's office or even in an emergency room where there's a lot of activity and a lot of noise and trauma, that's not an environment that feels safe. And the staff may not understand how to address or how to make those individuals feel comfortable.
Exactly. Many folks who have mental illnesses may have some behaviors which are disconcerting to folks who aren't used to them or trained. They may not be able to express themselves clearly or their needs.
Right.
And we don't expect that people who aren't trained in mental health to really understand how to care for them. And that's been a barrier because in the physical healthcare world, there have not been a lot of folks who have been trained in dealing with folks with mental illness specifically. It ranges across the board. There's some fabulous providers out there, doctors, nurse practitioners, who are just naturally good at communicating with folks and making them feel at ease. But as you said, in busy clinics, busy emergency departments, there's a lot going on.
Right.
The time frames are short, and where we would take 15 to 20 to 30 minutes to really find out what's going on with somebody, if the physician is required to see somebody every 10 minutes, that doesn't really allow for that kind of expansive or trust building. So it's not blaming anybody. It's just that the system been unable to adapt, and we've had to have special projects such as this one to allow more time for the physical healthcare provider to develop that relationship, take the time to sift through their initial impressions of the individual's behaviors or the way they may talk or the things that they say to get to what they really need. And that does take a little extra time.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said it's not blaming, because I've heard this in other shows that we've done, even with an elderly population that really requires more time. And you know, the concept is slow medicine works better for them in terms of being able to get to information, and that every 5 or every 10 minute slot doesn't work for them.
And it's also the developing the trusting relationship.
Yes.
Our physical health care providers said our clinics now are so rushed and have so many clients and so many needs, and the providers don't always, it's not always the same provider.
Sure.
So you don't have, like when I was growing up, I had my doctor who I saw for 20 years.
Yeah.
Doesn't always happen now.
No.
Especially in the Medi-Cal funded clinics.
Right.
So there is turnover. So for an individual who already may have issues in trusting somebody, that doesn't lead to a conversation that would elicit information that's difficult.
Yeah, they're not seeing familiar faces necessarily.
Yes. And then there is the other issue of stigma, where people who are not aware of or associated with folks who have mental illness, even though 1 in 4 adults have some sort of mental illness, and every family has members who are impacted by mental illness or addiction, we just see that there's still the stigma that sometimes our folks aren't believed. They're seen as medication seeking or other issues. And the more we can help our client, their patient, express their needs in a way that can be treated seriously and appropriately, we all win. It drives down unnecessary emergency room costs. It provides better care. There's better health outcomes for the individual, which is good for everybody.
You know, and I think when we talk about, you talk about emergency rooms, I would think that the emergency rooms can also be re-traumatizing for individuals who have mental health issues as well.
They can be. And while the emergency rooms are still very much the first line for somebody in psychiatric crisis, and we do work closely with the emergency departments here in the county, if somebody arrives in the emergency department with a physical health disorder, wound, a car accident, something, and they're having difficulty communicating, yes, it can be very, very difficult. And we have some very caring emergency department staff. We work with them frequently. But it's still, they are running on all four. And it's not a time when you can be slow down. I like that term, slow medicine. I hadn't heard that, but that's very appropriate. And it doesn't happen. That's not what
the system isn't designed for it at all. Yeah. So after getting the money from the grant, what was the next step?
Well, the next step was to go through all of the requirements of the grant, and there are quite a few data measures which show the efficacy of this kind of treatment, health indicators, which is great, but there's quite a bit. So we had to set up the system to collect all the information, and then we had to work with our partners at CHC to find the right provider who would be able to come to our site and start seeing folks in our clinic. We also took one of our group rooms, and between CHC and grant funding, made it into a convertible clinic assessment site. So Donna can talk a little bit more about the equipment that was necessary, but we actually have a mental health group room that converts every week into an examination room.
Huh.
And that was essential, so that the provider would have the tools that they would need in order to do evaluations, and also to kind of make everybody understand this is a service that's done here for your benefit. And so there were those pieces. We attempted various models, but finally, after a lot of work and patient partnership with CHC, hit on a model that's working extremely well now.
Is this a model that has been piloted or used in other areas, and you had something to start from that was successful somewhere else?
Yes, these grants had been available previously in other counties, and I know some of the counties up north, like Glenn County, Nevada County, had already had grants and had already done some of this embedding of physical health care.
Mm-hmm.
It can either be embedded with physical health care inside the behavioral health clinic, or it can be what we call bidirectional, where we start with assessments and evaluations in one house and then take the rest of the care to the other house,
mm-hmm.
so that the individual patient becomes familiar and comfortable with both the physical health care clinic if they have more complicated needs that need to be met within a clinic that has different equipment, or if they just have general healthcare needs, assessments, general cold care, things like that can be done in a clinic that doesn't have all the equipment. They can be seen on the mental health side.
And you chose not to take the bidirectional.
We do the bidirectional here as well, but first visit really, or the first steps and the wellness visits and the health indicator visits are done in the mental health site primarily. But we do also have folks who now feel much more comfortable going over to their primary site because of this experience.
What were the results that you were seeing from clinics that did this, from projects that did this in other areas that were goals that you had for this county?
We saw, and I can speak to some of them from just talking to the other counties. I don't have the data, but a great increase in people with mental illness receiving physical health care. There were people who hadn't been seen by a primary care doctor for 10, 15 years who finally were seen.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, one of them here, and Donna can tell the story a little bit more, but hadn't been seen in 10 years and immediately was sent to the emergency room for a very serious illness.
Mm-hmm.
So the health indicators, like their sugar, their A1C, their diabetes checks, their chronic health care needs around heart and weight, and all those indicators that everybody now knows can point to chronic illness, chronic physical illness that can be managed through diet, exercise, appropriate treatment. We saw a lot of those indicators go down throughout the state and other places where they had more access to care in a setting that they felt comfortable. And then with the team approach, the follow-up to help them remember to take their insulin or go for a walk or engage in some of the more wellness activities that further improved their health.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been very successful.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great sounding program. That's great. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio station from Salinas to Ventura, and streaming on the web at kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. The voices with me today are Ann Robin, Health Agency Behavioral Health Administrator, Donna Hayes, Project Director, San Luis Obispo Health Integration Project, or SLOHIP, and Jennifer Robinson, the Community Health Care Service Coordinator for Homeless, Medicare, and Substance Abuse with Community Health Centers of the Central Coast. We're talking about a collaboration between these agencies to improve the integration of physical and behavioral health care for those at risk through a new program called San Luis Obispo Integration Project. Today's show is live, and you're welcome to join us with your questions or comments. And you can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. And Jennifer, I'm going to pop over to you because Community Health Centers is a big player in this, and the reason Community Health Centers was chosen.
So I came into this program the end of July of 2018, and it was introduced to me as a partnership between County Mental Health and CHC to basically provide that warm handoff for the clients at County Mental Health who are engaged in their behavior health treatment. However, were not engaged in their primary care treatment and had not been. So what it allows for us is to schedule these patients with the provider at County Mental Health, one of our CHC providers. They then can basically spend that extra time with the client and build a foundation so that when they're done with the client and we schedule that follow-up in our brick and mortar clinic, they can have their labs already done. They can, if they needed to see a specialist or referrals to be completed before they see that primary provider, it allowed a continuity of care. And what we've seen is the clients following up with that appointment with their primary care, and then from there they're able to launch out throughout the CHC clinics to other specialty services such as behavioral health, dental, pharmacy, lab draws, chiropractic, just to name some of the specialties. We've had wonderful feedback from our providers from the clinic setting in our brick and mortar clinics, stating that they've welcomed these clients because they've, as I said, had this foundation of information on their physical health so they can pay attention to what the client's needs, what they questions that they have, and spend that extra time with them.
What were some of the challenges that the clinics faced? And I wanted to back up for a moment. The CHC, Community Health Centers, took over the county clinics process prior, correct? I mean, there used to be county clinics.
Many, many years ago.
Many years ago.
2004, I believe.
Yeah. So you guys have been doing Medi-Cal clinics. You've been taking care of throughout the county, and you spread into other areas as well.
Yes.
So you've got clinics in a lot of different communities.
Yes, we are in Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County. We have over 30 clinics. One of the main focuses is creating clinics that have integrated and all-inclusive care where they can go see their primary, they can see their dental in the same building, they can see optometry, women's health, all these different service lines, and not have to go to all these different locations throughout the county. They can be seen at one clinic. And so what we do with those clients at SLOHIP is after that provider sees them, we set them up with a clinic that generally has the labs within it and has those services so they can have that integrative approach and become acclimated with that clinic and all the staff and services provided.
And some of the clinics actually do assist in even accessing Medi-Cal, correct, and funding for different kinds of programs. So the clinics have been set up in the county so that accessibility to care, if they wanted the care, was, you were trying to provide that.
Yes.
These are individuals that even with that, there were issues, correct?
Yes, and one of the wonderful things about Slo Hip we've been able to address is if a client for some reason has had a lapse in their Medi-Cal, mm-hmm. And also in our CHC clinics, if they've had a lapse in their Medicare or their Medi-Cal, we provide those resources to them to either become enrolled or to provide locations for social services to get that reactivated for them. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we do have special programs so that they can still be seen until that happens.
Yeah, yeah. And are you seeing that with the ability to work with behavioral health, that individuals have, say, their testing and the importance of it explained to them more?
Yes. One of the wonderful things about one of our providers is after they leave our Slo Hip clinic, they are actually given specific reading materials on if they have a diagnosis, even if they come in, let's say they have the flu, information on the flu, staying hydrated, at-home care instructions. The provider spends time counseling the patient, and also the medical assistant does also. There's three of us on staff at the Slo Hip clinic, myself, the provider, and one to two medical assistants.
Okay, and this is in behavioral health?
Yes, this is the CHC clinic within the County Mental Health.
Okay, great. And I'm coming right over to you. So how did you get involved?
I was invited to be assigned to this. It had been already up and running, or it had already been there for 10 months when I was invited in to get some additional program going. So my big piece was developing a program. And my whole thing, and of course, with the integration is whole person care. This is a term that's becoming very popular, and we want people to know what this means, and everything that they've magnificently talked about is really much includes all of that. Is how do we get folks with severe symptoms that maybe are just too disorganized, or they're forgetful, or they have a lot of barriers like transportation, just remembering things, how do we get them the care they need? And in the whole person care, we're doing the medical piece, the health assessments, but we're also doing the behavioral health end also. So we created a program that would include the nutrition and some activity. We have a couple of walking groups. We have things to deal with their symptoms like coping with anxiety. We have a co-occurring, and if folks don't know what that means, it's when they have a mental health disorder and they're using some type of substance. Mm-hmm. And especially with some of the medications these folks are on, it can cause weight gain and other problems like that. So a lot of the co-occurring piece, I wanted it to deal with not just drugs and alcohol. It's what addictions are these people are dealing with? Tobacco, food. Mm. So it's like, let's deal with the core of the addiction, not mm-hmm. what the addiction is, so they don't substitute one for the other. So we have a successful co-occurring group that's dealing with, no matter what addiction it is, they're all dealing with how to cope with that kind of stuff. We have our newest group is coping with chronic pain. We have a large percentage of our folks that also have chronic pain and get seen for that. And how do they deal with it when the medication isn't quite doing it? So it's more behavioral stuff that they how to take care of themselves. So those are the type of groups that we're offering that are all inclusive to the whole person, and that because it all combines together. So whatever is affecting them emotionally affects their physical and vice versa. So as we started developing the clinic, we start off in my office, Jennifer and I do, and so it's kind of like one big happy family. So we're making the best ability, the person comfortable with the idea of you're going to be seen and this is what's going to happen. So we explain a lot about what's going to happen before, and that right there, I've seen drive the comfort level completely up, because then now they know what to expect. So it's the simple little things that you just take for granted.
Yeah.
So
you need to be seen by a doctor. End of story. Take care of it just doesn't work.
Part of the policy that I have there is I have an open door policy. My door is physically open unless I'm dealing directly with clients. So this enables the providers, the clinicians to walk over to my office and say, hey, this person hasn't been seen by a doctor in 5 years, or they're having this other problem, you know, and see, we can get them in usually in the next week. So if they walk them over to my office on a Thursday, we're going to see them next Wednesday. We also started doing health assessments for the drug and alcohol folks that are required to have some physical exam for their programs. So that cuts down on the CHC load in the brick and mortar clinics to be able to get those things done that are required. So those are some of the things that we've been doing. We have a nutritional therapist that the important thing that I wanted her to address was these are folks that may be homeless or living mm-hmm. out of their car. They may not have access to storing food or cooking food. Some of them may have really poor dentures or no teeth at all.
Right.
Can you give them some type of recipes and information about how they're going to eat in those circumstances so they don't have to go to the fast food or the processed foods from the 7-Elevens, those types of things? And she always brings a healthy snack. So that is how we've been addressing the whole person care. And some of the really great stuff that I personally been able to witness is the integration going on right before our very eyes. When we have a client in our office and they're having a specific problem, and we basically problem solve it right there with them on the spot. And then we go on. And I don't believe they've, from my experience and in hearing what these folks have to say, is that that happens very often to them. And I'm always asking them, once they've been seen in the clinic, what's your experience of it? They love it because they're getting more time, they're getting that extra attention, and they feel, and this is, I quote many times, I feel listened to, I feel cared about.
Oh.
That right there is the biggest reward of all, is that you're really meeting that need that has been absent from their lives and them getting care. We've had people, like there's been said, that haven't been seen for 10, 15 years that are now getting things diagnosed and treated. We have two, what do we call, health navigators. And because we are a partnership, not just with CHC, but Transitions Mental Health Association provides us with peer support, the health navigators, and their role is to assist these folks that are in slow hip with not only identifying their health and wellness goals, but helping support them. How do we get them to that? So, for instance, one of them had not had any labs drawn in over 5 years, deathly afraid of needles.
Uh-huh.
So we had one of the health navigators go with the person down to the hospital, sit with them, and they had lab drawn for the first time in 5 years. So they were able to actually get treatment for and diagnosis of things that had been going on in their body that they never did before because of that fear.
Yeah.
So it's just the little things like that that we take for granted that this population just completely embraces. You know how many times I've been told thank you for what you guys are trying to do, and it is all driven by client-centered. So all the groups and the support stuff we do is based on what the clients are telling me, because I continually ask them, what's needed? What do you want? I used to do the life skills group, and I'd made my curriculum based on what they were telling me. So I said, well, okay, that maybe we can do that for next week, and we'd develop a curriculum for that. So there's a little bit of everything that addresses not just the medical piece, but their emotional piece, Yeah.
Do you have a core group of clients or patients that come in? Are you seeing new individuals all the time? You've been up and running 22 months? Or?
Yeah, that's the interesting piece. Just like when we decide we're going to go to the gym and we buy a membership. Some people are really good about it, and other people's like, they don't go once a month. It's the same way. Yeah. So we have folks that are really excited about the program, and then for one reason or another are just they don't follow through. So part of the Health Navigator's role is to do what we call the check-in. So mm-hmm. either by call or they can be seen in the clinic and just, hey, how you doing? Because I used to make those calls myself at the beginning of the program when it's first started. It's like I'd be staying in the evening because I know that's when I'm going to find people home.
Right.
So you call them and say, how you going? You were talking about wanting to walk more. You've been able to do that. Well, what's stopping? So we'd problem solve. So when they have their health and wellness goals, which I go over in a care plan when I'm enrolling them, so I can refer back to that. Well, you said you wanted to come to the nutrition class because you were having problems with, you know, sugar or whatever. And I have noticed you haven't come. Is there something that's stopping you? Or what's your... So then we talk about barriers.
Yeah.
So it's just from one thing to the next. When you're sitting there having a conversation, it's not really an interview. It's like just have a conversation with the person about what health and wellness means to them. Then you get it. I also have a what I call a view book. So it's about everything that's in the program. So it's stuff to look at. So they just don't have to sit there and talk to me.
Yeah.
And as they're looking through it, they start identifying. So I don't have to do all the work. They start identifying what they want to do. Oh, there's a walking group. I could certainly use that. I certainly need that nutrition class. I'm having a lot of trouble with coping skills. So they pretty much choose it themselves. So that's the whole person care and the client centered is where you're just providing them with the information and they're choosing it. So that's what, you know, because as anything else, if you're not prepared to make some of the changes that are required, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, right?
It's like that for everybody, whether you're in getting services of behavioral health or not.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Chris Kingdom Barker, and you're listening to Voices, Central Coast Voices on KCBX. HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX, HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. Our topic for today's show is the San Luis Obispo Health Integration Project, or SLOHIP. My guests are Ann Robin, Health Agency Behavioral Health Administrator, Donna Hayes, Project Director for San Luis Obispo Health Integration Project, and Jennifer Robinson, the Community Health Care Service Coordinator for Homeless, Medicare, and Substance Abuse with Community Health Centers of the Central Coast. You too can be a part of this show by calling us if you have a question or a comment. Perhaps you have a question about somebody in your life that could benefit from the services. You can call us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And question for you, how do individuals get identified when they would qualify for this program or could benefit from the program? And how do you get the word out to people?
So this particular program is only available to people who are currently enrolled in the county's mental health services,
okay,
or in one of our contract agencies like Transitions Mental Health or Family Care Network. So we start with them being somebody who's receiving treatment for either their mental health needs or their substance abuse needs.
Okay.
And then usually it's their primary provider, their therapist or their psychiatric technician or their psychiatrist who will talk to them about the program and say, hey, you're having these needs. Why don't you go talk to Donna, who's also a psychiatric technician, mm-hmm. as well as the coordinator of this program for us, and let her know what's going on, and maybe you'd be interested. So it's from within our services, mm-hmm. And a number of referrals have come directly, walked down the hall, as Donna said, from either inpatient unit or from one of the service providers in our SLO adult outpatient unit. Currently, we're only providing the physical health care portion in our San Luis Obispo adult outpatient clinic. Mm-hmm. I know that Donna's reaching out for some of the wellness activities in our South County clinic, but we don't have the physical health care embedding yet.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it would be great to be able to do that countywide.
Is that kind of a goal?
It's a goal, mm-hmm. And it's going to see how it all rolls.
Yeah.
But the project has been successful. It's a lot of work for CHC, and it's a new model for CHC as well, and we just appreciate so much how they've partnered with us to do something that's a little bit different than their usual practice,
mm-hmm.
and it's been. But they are also seeing the outcomes. And then, as Jennifer said, the clients who may not have always been as easy to work with in their brick and mortar clinics,
mm-hmm.
like at Casa Street, have a much better relationship with their primary care provider once they are starting to be seen in the regular clinic. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, and how is this program paid for?
So Donna's position and Jennifer's position in part are paid through the grant, and then some of the equipment and other things. And then CHC obviously can bill for any of the medical services that they can provide. So it's a combination of both grant funding and Medi-Cal generally.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I think we have a question. Is it Catherine? Yes. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, did you have a comment or a question?
I do. First of all, I'm so grateful for this program. I don't know how long it's been going on, but I'm so happy that I tuned into you because I am the mother of a son that has an open case of behavioral health. He's, been like that for a long, long time, and it is like pulling teeth, going to doctors, going to clinics. He's been treated quite rudely, unfortunately, and it's like it's nobody's fault, but the mainstream doctors are not prepared to handle him at all. And So I am so excited, and I'm wondering if we've been transferred to the Atascadero Clinic. I'm wondering if it's happening up there.
Hi, thank you for calling. No, it's not happening there yet. It's still at a pilot program, but we'll see how we can spread it out to the other clinics over time. But right now, it's only available fully in the San Luis Obispo Outpatient Clinic.
Is it possible to have your doctor up at Atascadero and then go down there for the physical part of it?
Yeah, if they're enrolled in the program, they have access to any of our groups or the primary care clinic.
Okay, so I just need to call and make an appointment then.
Yes,
With Donna. So you would want to call and make an appointment with Donna Hayes. And what number would she call, Donna?
805-788-2456.
Did you get that, Catherine?
I'll call Behavioral Health and ask them to put me in touch with Donna Hayes.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Catherine.
Bye.
All right.
So that is a perfect example of why we've been dreaming of this for so many years.
I'll bet.
I've dealt with so many family members who were concerned about their loved ones.
Yes.
And just couldn't find the right match for getting their physical health care done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My boyfriend years ago had a little brother who had mental health issues, and he just would flip out when he was taken into a physician's office, and it would scare people in the waiting room. And even though this was his pediatrician, and they would not want him in the waiting room because the family, the pediatrician was trying to separate him from the rest of his patients and their kids that were sitting in the doctor's office. And it was, and I know the staff wasn't trying to be cruel to this family, but it was profoundly cruel to see what was happening for them. So yeah, I think Catherine's comments probably are not unique to people that are in these situations. And let's hear from Valerie. Hi, Valerie.
Hi.
Did you have a comment or
just
question?
I just want to give a shout out to Donna and the rest of you for all the good work you do. I'm a retired social worker, but I just wanted to make sure, I wanted to tell you that the positive changes that you get with chronic issues come by taking the time to build a relationship, and who has the time to do that? And so how wonderful that a grant came through and federal help and wherever else the monies can come from and hopefully keep coming from. Because, this is a real lifeline to the people in our community. There's just kind of nowhere else to get the full service. I love the, whatever, it wasn't the Wish book. It was just a book Donna mentioned about, seeing what was offered, and maybe I could use this, and maybe this would help. I mean, how clever. It's just wonderful. I'm very pleased.
It sounds like in your work as a social worker, you saw situations that could have benefited from something like this.
Yeah, it was in Children's Protective Services in another county, and, parents just get in a loop, and you don't want them to lose their children forever. You want them to have a place where they can be supported and have bunch of issues in one place and you know, not farmed out, but just referraled out so that everything can be taken care of or as much as possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, thank you, Valerie.
Sure. Thanks.
All Bye-bye. Right. Thanks for calling in. You had mentioned all the different services that you have, Jennifer, in community health centers. So if individuals were identified as having needs for glasses or for dental care, are those situations that could be offered?
Yes, they definitely can. After being at SLOHIP, they can definitely, when we're making their follow-up appointment, if the provider there feels a need for them to see optometry or dental, what they'll definitely get that referral. Any clients can see a listing of the services in the multiple clinics at communityhealthcenters.org. If they have any questions or they want to schedule an appointment, they can definitely call our navigation center at 1-866-614-4636. And they are, our navigation center is very well versed on all the services, and they're wonderful assisting and explaining the services to the clients. And also, if for some reason they have to go to a separate location for a separate specialty service, they will explain that to them, and then they'll also assist with navigating that with transportation, helping to schedule transportation. If there's an interpreter that's needed, they will take all that information down and make sure that the client has all those resources available to them. So when they get to that appointment,
does community health centers actually provide the transportation or
yes.
schedule it through other transportation providers?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so CHC, actually, we have transportation in-house. We also use ride-on service. The clients have been very receptive to it. Our in-house CHC transportation, it does require 48 hours notice, business hours notice, and they can be picked up from any location. So sometimes our homeless clients are like, well, I don't have a house that I can be picked up from. We have picked up at the shelters. We have picked up at a gas station. In front of the courthouse, so, and then we'll drop them off also. So it doesn't matter the location as long as it's safe, of course, but we will transport those clients.
Okay. And you had mentioned, Anne, a special room that was put together and equipped. What was that? Was that for the medical screenings, or it has to be converted into a medical screening room?
Luckily, it was a group room in the slow outpatient clinic that already had a long counter and a sink in it. So the conversion was minimal. It was really being able to move tables around, move chairs around, and have portable equipment that's locked in that room that the provider needs when he or she comes to do the clinic. So it's on Wednesdays, it's a mental, it's a physical health care clinic, and the rest of the week, it's a group room.
And I'm the one that sets it up, so I know everything that goes into it. Tuesday evening, I start converting that room about 4 o'clock. So the chairs go out near my office, the tables come up, the equipment that is stored in my office, like the oxygen tank and the scale and some of those types of things, get, and we have a specific setup that's conducive to what they need to do, and locked cabinets. So, and then they have been wonderful. CHC, the medical assistants, they have been started tearing it down, so I don't have to. I was so grateful for that. So it's just been absolutely, when we talk about partnerships, I think we had talked about this in a meeting before, Jennifer, it's not really a partnership. It's like, it's not two different people. We become a team. We become one, so there are no differences between us. That's their gig, and that's what I do. We also have partners with public health who do the tobacco cessation, and we have the private contractor that does the nutrition portion of it. And then Transitions, of course, which does the peer support. So we all kind of come together. We just had a recent partnership meeting a few weeks ago where we all met together to see where have we come so far, what has been done, and what are some are still of our barriers. And we had several of the participants show up and give their view on how what's helped and what could be better utilized. And so it's always about getting their feedback, because we're not going to know what to do
right.
without their help.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you, I mean, you could set anything up, but that's not going to mean it's going to be successful unless they're participating in it.
Yeah.
So the great stories that I have had, we have probably about 9 folks that have been in the program, what I call 18-monthers. They've been doing it for 18 months. Now, they may, and some of them have gotten to the point, because they're getting both their medical and their mental health needs met, and they're improving. They go have part-time jobs. So, I'm sorry I can't come to that group anymore because I'm working.
Oh, that's a nice thing to
yeah,
hear,
I was
isn't
like, oh,
it?
Shucks.
Yeah.
yeah. but then we have the folks, because we just leave it open indefinitely. As long as they're willing to come in every 6 months and have their monitoring, their reassessments, they can be in the program forever. So someone will come and go, but they'll come back and like, oh, I had this stuff going on, but I want to get back. I'm like, well, just start showing up. And so it's an open door. Absolutely open door policy, as long as you're enrolled and you keep participating in the parts that we are required to do for our grant, then they can be a part of it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yes.
And I just wanted to touch on what Donna was saying about when we work together at Cal Mania Health, it's coming from a team-based model. One of the success stories is when these clients who have not been have not seen a primary provider and see one for the first time, and then all of a sudden get 10 referrals to specialty, and they have this huge lab workup. They look at it and it just seems like Mount Everest to them.
Yeah.
So one of the wonderful things that we've been able to create is Donna is able to connect with their caseworker, and then what they do is they begin a plan with the provider of a treatment plan of like, this is what I want you to do first.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you're going to do second. This is what you're going to do third. So they don't feel so overwhelmed.
Right.
So they can
break it down into manageable parts.
Yes, they can address their urgent needs. And then I also just wanted to mention for the clinic out County Mental Health, when we do break everything down, there are no medications on site. Just wanted to note that there is no medications on site for our clinic.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the great features that we've been doing is because we're more interim, so they get started out at the clinic. They can be seen to get established primary care. So if they haven't seen a doctor, if they haven't, we call reestablished. If they're assigned someone at CHC, but they haven't seen them for a while, we can get them started to reestablish them that way. And then we have what we call the acute medical. So I had this today. One of the clinicians, one of the LPTs, came over to my office to have someone that needs to get scheduled. So I walked over to his office, talked to the person, they came over to my office, we got him set up for Wednesday. He's having an acute medical problem right now that sometimes they can't get in to see their primary for sometimes a month or two.
Yeah.
So this is a good intermediate thing that, okay, so we'll get seen next Wednesday, then all that information will go back to your primary care doctor so you can follow up with them.
Fantastic. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio. If you just joined us and you want to hear earlier portions of the show, you can. It is recorded and will be archived on our website at kcbx.org. You can listen to it when it's posted at the end of the day today, or you can listen on iTunes. You can just use our drop-down menu to get to any of the shows that we do locally and listen to them when it's more convenient to you. And Robin, Donna Hayes, and Jennifer Robinson are here with me today. And they've been sharing information about how their 3 agencies, along with other agencies, are bridging the gap between primary health care and behavioral health to enhance the quality of life for their clients. We have about 13 minutes left in today's show and maybe time for one or two more calls. You can call us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. And I wanted to also get from you what has been really overall the most profound thing that you think has come out of this project so far?
This is like my baby. You know, you develop something and you hope for the best and you get all the pieces in place. And the greatest joy is just watching people change because mm-hmm. of their needs being met. Because you don't get to see a lot of that sometimes yeah. with this population. And things are very slow to improve sometimes. Mm-hmm. So when they can come in and say, I, you know, went and got my lab done, or, you know, my cough went away, or I'm getting a lot from that class. It's really helped me. So I went out and got a job. I mean, those are the things that you can only dream of hearing.
Yeah.
I was a med manager, case manager prior to taking this assignment, and I was already doing this kind of thing with my caseload, so it was like a natural fit, and I was so happy when they asked me. I'm like, oh, you bet. This is so perfect to go to the next level. Now let's do it on a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. Let's get this to everybody.
Mm-hmm. How about for you, Jennifer?
For me, it's being able to go into our brick-and-mortar clinics and actually hear from our primary providers, seeing the significant change in their clients, seeing the follow-through from the clients, and also on like a higher level, an understanding between county mental health and CHC services. One of the amazing things, as Donna has said, when we're putting the clinic together or breaking it down or throughout the day, a lot of the providers at County Mental Health will come down and start chatting with us, or we start chatting with them. So we're fostering and building these relationships where they really weren't in place before, and we have more of an understanding of pathways of service and navigating it for clients in these different realms, but mm-hmm. being able to do it cohesively together. And to have that happen so that our clients are happy and the providers are happy and the system as a whole, it's just been amazing.
Do you think there's been some enhanced awareness by the providers that maybe didn't have maybe as much knowledge about how to integrate with this particular population?
Yeah, I was going to say, Donna can actually touch on this one.
Yeah.
Actually, before they were in the building, I did like what I call an interim treatment plan and care plan. So it's a two-page, one side addresses the medical, one side addresses the behavioral health. And it's basically the health and wellness goals, the health indicators, the lab values that are sent directly to the primary care provider with explanation. They are enrolled in this program. This is what we're hoping to do. Can you please review this, make any comments you or recommendations, and then send it back to us. So I was hoping just maybe to have one. And at this point, and even though this other stuff is going on, I still send that stuff out. And not only are the providers signing them and sending them back, they're also writing comments on them and recommendations. Sounds good. No, we want you to keep doing that. Or this is what I would want them to do when they see the list of the type of groups and things that are available. Mm-hmm. So that had been going on since I came on board. So I think that helped to at least bridge some of that hadn't been going on before. So they're a little bit more familiar with what we're trying to do with the folks and get them into primary care.
Yeah.
And they know their patients are engaged. Like mm-hmm. they can actually get information back from her, and they see that their clients are engaged and they're trying. So they see it from a different aspect, that they're fulfilling and attempting to create change in their own mental and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
And we have with our database, we create what we call a report card. So as the longer they're in it, then you see all their health indicators that were taken at all the reassessment points, their blood work, and all the groups that they've been participating in, what their goals have been. So I send that out to them also. So it's been a really fantastic response back from the folks at CHC, just recognizing, thank you, you know, we'd like this done for our clients also.
Yeah, that's great. How about for you, Ann?
I just see all the hope and the changes both in the system and in the collaboration between two agencies that have been somewhat at times intransigent and siloed, mm-hmm. where we are all seeing the benefit to the individual that we mean to serve, to really have the integrated care, the communication. And I, as one of the callers mentioned, I hope that we can continue this and expand it to other areas of the county. Many years ago, I worked with a client in a different county who went in for 2 years complaining of back pain, and the physical health care provider thought she was med-seeking. Finally, one of the physician's assistants sent her for x-rays, and she had lung cancer and died about 3 months later.
Oh.
So I come from that 20 years ago to this very collaborative, open discussion of how primary care providers and behavioral health providers can make a better experience for a human being who's their patient or their client, and just the community outcomes of people who have better care, better treatment, become better community members. Mm-hmm. As Donna said, some of these folks are now working, or they have better relationships with their family because they're not in pain, they're not upset, they're not frightened. So my goal is just building a better community through health.
Yeah.
And without all aspects of health, we can't do that.
Yeah, and I think you use the word hope, but for the mom who called in about her son, hope for families, mm-hmm. too, that there's a better way.
Yes.
Of accessing the care. You mentioned before we came on the air, too, that you wanted to make sure that we got information out about a health fair.
Oh, a wellness fair.
Wellness
yes,
fair.
And this is a perfect talking about this project, which goes into what we're trying to create and do and further develop in the community is a integrative way for a lot of providers, agencies, people that serve all kinds of folks, to be in one place so the community at large can go, the clients we serve can go, other clinicians and providers can go and get information about all different kinds of services that are out there. Mm-hmm. There are some that when I was signing up folks up for this, it's like, I didn't even know they were out there and what they did. So this is an opportunity for everyone to be in the same place to find out how we can help each other, because we want to reduce the gaps for some of these folks, because we may not be able to do this, but I know this agency can provide that, and how we can learn from each other just by being there. And everybody wants that. I've talked to enough, and I've been to enough of these meetings that they say this. And so we're going to make it happen on March 20th. It's at the Copeland Health Pavilion, Education Pavilion, at behind French Hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's open to the public from 3 to 5:30.
3 to 5:30 in the pavilion itself?
Yes. They'll actually have, when you first walk in, the first classroom to the right. That's mm-hmm. like a starting point.
Okay.
And then you go up to the third floor, and that'll be all the other event participants will have
and
tables.
And will these be information booths, screenings?
Yes. Information booths.
Information booths.
And just the ability, we'll have community guests sign in. So if people want more information or want to know about the next one, I'm assuming there will be a next one. So we just want to build from here. We want to build a better integrative healthcare system where we know where to turn people to when there isn't a lot of money available to develop new things. Well, let's see what we can do with what we have.
Sure.
And who can be a part of that.
So are you still signing up agencies? Are you looking for agencies you're looking for people to attend?
Looking for people to attend at this point. I actually had to turn some agencies away, unfortunately. I mean, that's not such a bad thing to have to say, but it's, you know, for the ones.
Sure.
But, you know, of course, they're invited to come and bring their cards and still network and get involved with the next one.
Free.
It's free. We had an overwhelming response if the tables filled up quickly.
Good.
So I'm really excited about it.
With as many agencies as are out there, I would imagine they would. And good to know, again, the date of that.
March 20th, Wednesday, March 20th, from 3 to 5:30 p.m.
Okay. At the
Copeland Health Education Pavilion.
Okay.
Behind French Hospital.
Thank you, Donna. Any last words from Jennifer or Ann?
Just that I'm very appreciative of the partnership that we've been able to commit to, and the clients that we've been able to assist. It's been very, very rewarding on all ends. And if anybody is interested, they just need to call Donna, because she is the access point for our CHC clinic at the County Mental Health. The hours are from 8 to 5.
Okay, and the phone number?
805-788-2456.
Okay.
And I'm just so appreciative of all the work that these two dynamos have put into making this project happen. Donna is a force of nature and has done a great job. So I appreciate CHC. And Chris, thank you for allowing us to have this time.
My pleasure. Sure. I want to thank my guests, Ann Robin, Karen Hayes, and Jennifer Robinson. Next week, Fred Monroe and his guest, Pedro Hernandez, attorney Kevin Shankman, and Dr. Michael Lattner, as they discuss implementation of California Voting Rights Act and its consequences for minority representation. This show, Action for, has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, made possible by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices.